Hey, ¿qué pasa, Calexico? Welcome back to the podcast. Like always, before we begin, I want to thank my friends here at Calexico Brewing Company for allowing me to record today's episode here. Really appreciate it, guys. Today we have a returning guest. We were kind of cracking up before the interview was started because the first time we met was, or we recorded, was at a furniture store, my friend Robert Carreño's furniture store, Modern Furnishing. And then the second time was through Zoom. The first time we met was, we're talking about being in the Rotary Club and, you know, the things you guys do for the community. And then the second time, you came on to announce your candidacy for DA. I think it was during January when COVID numbers were going a little bit up. I had just gotten over COVID. So we're kind of like trying to keep it safe. And, you know, we did it through Zoom. And now we're back here at Calexico Brewing. Thank you for coming. Now my guest today, sorry, I didn't even mention your name, but my guest today is candidate for district attorney, Mr. George Marquez. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation. It's an honor to be here. And I do remember that first time at the furniture store, your friend almost talked me into buying a couch.
Yeah, that's true.
He's a good salesman.
Yeah.
Again, it's a pleasure to be here.
No, thank you for coming back and coming down to Calexico Brewing. So before we begin, I know we've already talked to you a couple of times, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself for those who haven't listened to?
Yeah, sure. I grew up here in Imperial Valley. Since I was 8 years old in El Centro, on the north side of town over there, on Euclid and then on Via. So I went to public schools in El Centro. I'm a Spartan. I went to Central Union High School, went to Imperial Valley College, then went to Cal State San Marcos. And then after a couple years, I went to law school, and I went to law school part-time at night. On a more personal level, I'm the youngest of nine children. There's an age difference between 20 years between me and my oldest brother, and my parents are from Sonora, Mexico. Mm-hmm. I'm married, and I got two little girls.
You mentioned that you're from the Valley. You're, you know, a Spartan. How important is it to you that, you know, that you're somebody from the community that's, you know, running for a position that obviously affects, you know, a lot of people in the community?
I think it's very important that you're immersed in the community and that people see you involved in the community, that you're not just saying that I grew up here, but you can point to instances where you know, solid examples of you growing up here. For example, I played Little League Baseball here in El Centro. My father owned a business in El Centro. And I have a lot of people. I have the same friends since elementary school, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, they still send me these funny text messages. it's very important because I think, to a certain degree, I think it's important to understand the Valley culture. And, people in the Valley, you know, we like our carne asadas. We like our, you know, we're very family oriented, and people here are humble.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I think especially, you know, growing up and going to public education, you get to see all these types of, you know, different groups that we have here in our communities, you know, your lower middle class or the lower middle class people, and, you know, the struggles that they go through. I bet that you had friends in elementary or high school that had brothers or family incarcerated that, you know, that might have been wrongly accused, you know, all these things that happen in the Valley.
Absolutely. I think I went to Lincoln Elementary School. I think, you know, if you look at it from a socioeconomic point of view, I think it's probably lower middle class. And I had friends who had family members who were incarcerated. I had friends from my childhood who were incarcerated, who took the wrong turns in life, you know, and ended up changing their lives around. I think all of that goes to my library of knowledge, the wisdom, so to speak, that I bring to the table. It's just not my experience as a lawyer. I think it's this library of knowledge I have of the wisdom of being a father, of growing up here in the Valley, knowing the social problems that we have.
Yeah. You know, talking about social problems, you know, there's a lot of people that kind of, you know, right now there's a big movement of, you know, social justice, you know, all these groups here in the Valley that are trying to, you know, bring equity to everybody, like especially people in the lower class of, you know, the economic system. How important is it to you to, you know, make sure that, you know, not only are you persecuting, you know, higher crimes, whether it's, I don't know, like people, money laundering or stuff like that, or is, you know, people who are accused of, you know, drug issues or domestic violence, all these little things that we see in you know, poor communities?
Well, I think one of the most important things when you're talking about justice is that everyone is treated the same. So I think regardless of socioeconomic status, you have to treat everybody the same. You can't give certain crimes more weight because of the victim is from a certain socioeconomic status. It has to be the same. With that being said, I think in reference to being the DA, I think it starts with accountability. You know, people have to feel like there's some sense of accountability, and then you go from there. You know, because there are certain people, for example, who have drug addictions, and the question then becomes, are you going to work with these people or not? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm more inclined to work with them if they really want the help, because at the end of the day, I think we're better as a community if these people are reintegrated back into the community. So, but at the same time, you know, drug dealers and especially the drug dealers who sell fentanyl, which is extremely dangerous, you know, they have to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law because it's so dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And you know, going back to, you know, different groups and communities here in the Valley, you know, I don't know if it happens in other towns, but here in Calexico, a lot of the local merchants are kind of upset that, you know, people break into their businesses and you know, the next day they see these guys, you know, they get caught and then they see these guys out in the community again. You know, how do we help these people who are trying to make a living, you know, keep their businesses alive, especially when it comes to the issues that they're facing with, you know, local crime?
Yeah, I remember my father actually was a business owner in El Centro, and he owned a cabinet business on the east side of town over there on 2nd Street. We were always getting broken into. You know, things were being stolen. And so I can kind of relate to those people, because at the end of the day, they're working hard for their money and having to replace, you know, things that are vandalized or stolen costs money, takes money from their profit. But you have to hold people accountable. You have to prosecute those people. There's a lot of frustration right now because people are being what they call cited and released. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. The district attorney really doesn't have much to do with the jail. That's a jail policy. Mm. However, there's a couple of things that the elected district attorney can do. The elected district attorney's voice, I've always said this, is very powerful. And you can make your disagreements with the way the process is working by making it known to the press or calling the sheriff. I mean, you have a very powerful voice in that regard. The second thing you can do is you can prosecute these people, because even though they're cited and released, if they commit a crime, there's going to be a police report written. And so the district attorney has the option of prosecuting it or not prosecuting it. And if they choose to prosecute it, that person is going to get notice to appear. They have to appear in court. If they don't, there's going to be a bench warrant issued, and then they can be arrested. So I think the district attorney just simply has to prosecute these cases and be aggressive. I feel a lot of frustration from the business owners because they've told me that. So there has to be prosecution in those cases so that they're made whole.
Mm, yeah. Going back to, you know, your experience, you were a part of the DA's office for a while, and you've also been, you know, part of a, you know, your own, I think you own your own, your own boss kind of deal. You're a business owner yourself
for yeah, close to 2 years, about a year and a half.
How do you or what like in terms of experience and education, Where do you, you know, place that as an important, you know, element into being a DA for the Imperial Valley?
Look, the position of district attorney is very important, and I think I alluded to this previously. It's not just about knowing the law, and that's part of it. It's about life experience as well. But in terms of my experience in criminal law is I have approximately 14 years of experience. That's about 9 years as a former prosecutor and about 4 years in criminal defense. Now, as a prosecutor, you learn one side of it, okay? Mm. You learn how important it is to prosecute people. You learn how to prosecute criminals. You learn the process. You learn a way of thinking. But that's only one side of it, okay? The other side is the defense, okay? I've worked both sides of that. So I worked some time in private, and I did about, you know, I learned a lot about the defense side in private, but then I became a public defender. After I worked at the district attorney's office, I became a public defender, and I've been there. I'm a public defender right now, and I've learned another side. And it's a great training ground to be DA because all we do is criminal law, and it's intense. We see different. I see things from the other side. Mm-hmm. I know how a defense attorney thinks. That's the first thing. But I also see societal problems that my eyes weren't open to before, you know, and I can give you an example of that. Mental health. We have problems with mental health, and I think we need to find ways of treating it, because there are people that are falling through the cracks. So knowing the both sides is very important, because you have to be aggressive on crime. There has to be accountability. People have to feel that they just can't commit a crime and then they're going to get away with it. But on the other hand, you always have to understand the other side. And you have to make sure innocent people don't get dragged to the system. That's very important, because then you have an injustice. When you start having injustices, that's when you start losing public trust. Okay? An injustice can occur when you have cases that are too lenient, cases that are too heavy-handed, or innocent people who are dragged through the system. And so, as a district attorney, it's a delicate balancing act. And so, you have to be tough on crime, but you have to be careful as well.
So, I mean, being being on both sides of I guess you can say the law, kind of gives you a better perspective of when you see, you know, something that comes to your desk, you know, whether to pursue it or not, or you know, those kind of things. That
you got to keep in mind, at this point in my career, I've literally reviewed thousands of cases. Mm. Thousands of cases, because that's all I've done. I've done criminal law. And so, yeah, I can look at a case and I can tell you what the value of a case is and pretty much what the punishment should be.
Mm-hmm. And it's not always, you know, seeing a case seeing a case and saying, you know what, it's not always a punishment. It's a lot of times you need to decide if you, like you said, you mentioned treatment or you mentioned counseling. It's not always, you know, that case where you say like, oh yeah, let's give them time. It's, you know, better if you go counseling or.
Each case, you look at it on a individual basis, on a case by case basis, and you make a determination, you know, and you have to be able to see between the lines. Is this person really have mental health, or are they just saying they have mental health problems? You know, because if they don't have mental health issues, they have to be held accountable.
Mm.
But if they have mental health issues, you know, there is programs in California where they're eligible for certain diversion programs. But it depends on each case, how dangerous they are to the community. At the end of the day, the job of the district attorney is to keep the community safe.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, I have two girls here. And it's a big responsibility. You have to keep the community safe.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one.
Yeah. you said you were, you know, when you're working in the DA's office, you obviously work for the current DA because he's been there for almost 30 years now. What are some of the changes that you would like to see coming coming in if you were elected to DA?
Absolutely. What I want to see is I want to see more specialized units. So, and what I mean by that is I want people who to specialize, for example, in domestic violence. I want people to specialize in sex cases. I want people to specialize in homicide cases. The reason for that is because if you put like an attorney in an assignment for 2 years, he gets really good at it. And so you get more bang for your buck on the attorneys. I think for me, that's one approach. But again, in order to get to that point, you have to be able to retain attorneys, to recruit and retain attorneys, which has been a problem here. And so there has to be an approach to retaining attorneys. And I've said this, I think there has to be a change in the office culture. The office culture needs to change ASAP. And so attorneys have to feel like they shouldn't want to leave anywhere else.
And talking to, you know, some of the attorneys here that came by and left, what's one of the common reasons why they don't stay here in the Valley?
Look, there's several reasons, okay? You have attorneys who leave because of they don't make enough money. You have attorneys who come here and they want to get their experience and leave. And you also have attorneys who simply leave before low morale issues, okay? You really can't do much about the first two because the reality is we're one of the poorest counties in California. And I'd like to be able to get them a big raise, and I'm going to try to my hardest, but I can't guarantee that. Mm-hmm. Something that I think that I can work on is on the morale, because I do know a lot of attorneys who have left for morale reasons. And I think the numbers are right now in the last like 7 years, the DA's office has lost something like 44 attorneys, and public defender has lost like 19. It's somewhere around there, mm-hmm. give or take a number here or there. And so it's more than just money or anything else, or people coming here and getting their experience, because the public defenders can go get a job somewhere else as well. There's a morale problems. And I know that because I've seen it and I've talked to a lot of lawyers.
Mm-hmm. Hey guys, sorry for the interruption, but I want to take this time and thank my sponsors. I want to thank my friends Camilo, Jake, Eric Ortega. I want to thank Eddie Lopez from Roots Creative. Ms. Norma Sierra Galindo, IID Director representing Division 5 and serving the entire Imperial Valley. Will Torres from Valley Sports Network, your Imperial Valley source for sports. I want to thank Sergio's Tacos and Hot Dogs. With 8 years of experience serving the Imperial, San Diego, and Yuma counties with Mexicali-style hot dogs and taquizas, contact Sergio at 760-562-0057. Or look for Sergio, Tacos and Hot Dogs on Facebook. I want to thank Eric Reyes from Los Amigos de la Comunidad, empowering communities together. Finally, I want to thank David Gastelum. If you're thinking of buying or selling a home in the Imperial or San Diego counties, make sure you contact David. He's not only a realtor, but an investor with over 20 years of experience, and he'll teach you along the way in one of the most important investments of your life. Contact David at 760-235-9576, or look for David Gastelum on Facebook. All right, guys, well, now back to the show.
This was your first, you know, run at any public office, and you came in second, you know, in June. Going into, you know, November, you know, what are your feelings, you know, coming, you know, running in a county where not a lot of people vote, you know, I don't know if there's a lack of interest or, you know, why people don't vote. What are your feelings now that you've kind of successfully ran a first campaign?
Since I made it to the playoffs, so to speak.
A wild card kind of.
I actually feel great. I like my chances. I feel like I'm going to win this. And the reason I say that is because the tremendous amount of support I'm getting from people in the community. And I get stopped all the time. And I was just in the market the other day. I was walking out and somebody tells me and my whole family voted for you. And I get that more than, you know, more than I thought I would ever get. Mm-hmm. So I feel I like my chances. I like the people who are helping me in my committee. I see tremendous progress. And I think it's the message is getting out there that I just simply have more experience. You know, I simply have more experience. I'm vested in this community. I own a home in this community. I got two daughters. I'm married. I got two daughters. You know, and that's important too. It goes to wisdom. It goes to your view of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the big, most important things in being DA is a perspective. You know, I bring a wider perspective of things because of my life experience, because of my work experience. You know, and that's important. And mm-hmm. I think people, whether they admit it or not, I think they think about that in the back of their heads.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like to me, you know, talking to a lot of local young people that came down during COVID and they want, you know, they wanted change in their community. You know, for a while, you know, I felt like I was in that same boat. But I think that a lot of the times, you know, the experience that you get from, like you said, you know, being a parent, being a husband, being somebody that's involved in the community, that's been here. I've been here 30 years and, you know, yeah, it gives you a different perspective as to, you know, what we need in our community, what the community really wants, and not what you might think that somebody else wants.
Yeah. Let me give you an example of this. See, as a father, before I was a father and after I was a father, my perspective on life changed. You know, because after I saw my daughter's eyes for the first time, I changed, you know, and I saw the world differently. And I have two girls. And so when I see kids, you know, automatically, and I think this is true of most men, you know, you do not like seeing kids being harmed in any way. Okay. And that's something that just, you just have it because you're a father, you know, you know what, how vulnerable they are. You know, and you know, as an attorney who's, as an experienced attorney, I know how dangerous it can be out there. So my instincts are to want to protect kids. And I think it's because I'm a father. I think that perspective that I bring to the table is important. It's going to push me to want to protect our community. Another thing is, you know, being the youngest of nine children as well, I never knew my parents when they were young. You know, my mom was, I think she was 44 when I was born, and my father was 46. So by the time I could remember, they were already in their 50s, you know, and I never knew them as young. So when I see elderly people too, I can, you know, I feel a connection with them. And it's funny how many times I've seen old elderly women, and I tell them, you know, you look like you remind me of my mom. You know, and again, it's that desire to want to protect elderly because they're vulnerable as well. Mm-hmm. You know, and so I think that's important. Also, being a husband and loving my wife. You know, I don't want my wife to get hurt, and I see that in other women. I don't want them to be hurt. I don't want them to be victims of domestic violence. You know, those are very practical types of life experience that I bring to the table. You know, it's, you know, I just, it's hard to articulate. It's just, I think it's just something I feel internally that I'm going to try to do my best to keep this community safe.
And going back to voting, you know, normally in the June elections, there's a really low turnout. I mean, November, we'll see a little bit of a spike, but not too much. How do you approach, you know, a June campaign to a November campaign and making sure that, you know, new voters that didn't vote in June get to know you, the voters that didn't vote for you kind of, you know, or voted for the two candidates that didn't make it. How do you approach them to making sure that they know that you're the candidate for them?
You know what? You want me to reveal my secret? Huh? actually, the primary, I think you're right. It was much different because there was four of us. And to be honest with you, I just didn't feel the pressure that I do now. And I think we're being more creative. It's more creative in trying to reach different types of people, you know, whether it's the elderly, whether it's the young. it's being creative in the way that I'm trying to push my message out there. I want people to know, for example, that I have strong law enforcement backing. And so it's a message that we're trying to push, you know, because between the primary and now, I have gotten more law enforcement endorsements. And I think it's because of the trust is what it comes down to. They trust me.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to know that I'm a family man, you know, that I'm vested in this community. So it's a message that we're pushing out there. And we're thinking creatively and ways of doing that. And it's targeting certain areas, certain neighborhoods. It's different types of marketing, whether it's radio, TV, or whatever. I mean, but it's more intense this time. I will tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, especially when it's two candidates, you know, you need to broaden your spectrum as to who you're reaching out to, because there's less people for the votes to go around with. Thinking of, because I thought about running for city council here in Calexico, but I don't think I'm ready for the commitment. Thinking about you, that you have two young daughters, your wife, you know, it's a huge commitment to take this leap to be the DA. You know, what does your family say about, you know, your decision to run for DA?
You know what? I think when you're a family, they want what's best for you. You know, my wife, for example, she knows how important this is to the community as well, because I've told her, I think I could do a good job as a DA. And I think I'm the person to bring the changes that we need. And so she's helped me in that regard. And I think she's understanding. With that being said, it's been a tremendous challenge because, you know, I love my kids so much. And sometimes, you know, just leaving when I should be home with them, leaving because I have some type of commitment, it has been very, very difficult for me because I'm taking time from them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I do think about those things, you know, and I try to be the best father that I can, but I also want them to know that in life you have to sometimes reach for the stars and you have to, you know, chase your dreams, and great things never come easy. You know, to achieve something great, it does not come easy. It comes at great sacrifice. And for me, it's a sacrifice. It's a short-term sacrifice. But I think the community is going to be better for it. And I think ultimately my family is going to be better for it.
Mm-hmm. I remember when we did our first podcast, when you were talking about the radio, like you did kind of mention, you're like, you know what, you'll see me again. And this was, I don't remember when it was, but I remember you had mentioned it. And, you know, going back to when you finally made your decision to, you know, do run, to now, you know, all these, you know, events, campaigns, and, you know, obviously you've invested time, money into this campaign. Do you still think that, you know, it's the right decision to?
Absolutely. I know it's the right decision. You know, it's something I feel in my heart, and you know, I have no regrets about doing this. I'm doing it for the right reasons, you know, and I believe I'm qualified. It's the right time in my life. You know, I'm at the right age. I have the right life experience. I have the right professional experience. It's just a perfect time in my life. And I just, and so I have no regrets about it at all.
Yeah. What was I going to ask you? Yeah, I forgot. Anything that I haven't asked you that you want to share? And
yeah, you had mentioned about, I just occurred to me is other things I'm going to do inside the office is, for me, it's important to instill in the attorneys knowing that they're going to have a boss that's going to give them all equal opportunity to grow. You know, they're all going to have the opportunities to do the homicide cases. You know, obviously they're going to have to earn it somewhat and prove they're competent, but they're going to have that opportunity to grow within the office. And I'm going to give the young attorneys the support they need to grow professionally. Yeah, the trainings. I actually like it when they go out of county trainings, because they come back with some really neat ideas. And sometimes it's okay to get out of town. It kind of refreshes them, so to speak. Those are, you know, it's something that I was just thinking about as well. Another thing that's important in terms of what I want to do is, when I was a prosecutor, I was a juvenile prosecutor for about 4 years. And, you know, there's certain changes I think are needed in the juvenile system to make it more effective. You know, I want to implement restorative justice system for low-level juvenile crimes to see how that works, okay? To have them, have the victim confront them and have them talk it out, obviously with a round table of people, because studies have shown that resonates more with the victim and the offender as well. Okay, we're not talking murder cases. We're talking low-level cases. Mm. Where we're trying to deviate juveniles from going into a life of crime. All right? We need more ways of helping juveniles, because there are certain things that we know cause juveniles to go into a life of crime. Okay? Association, who they're hanging out with, the lack of a strong, stable, safe adult in their life. If they don't have that, that's an indicator of someone going into the juvenile system. Sexual abuse when they're minors. There is a correlation, for example, between girls who are sexually abused and what they call the pipeline to prison. So those are things that as a community we need to work on. It's not just the DA, but the DA is the one that can bring these problems to light and be the leader in that. And I want to be the leader in that. I want to help guide our youth so that they're not in the juvenile system. And I'm okay with thinking outside the box. I'm okay with being creative. But I think it's important. I'm a big believer in that.
You mentioned endorsements. I know that I recently saw a video that my coworker, John Moreno, shout out to John, I saw a sign in his house. You know, he's one of the people who endorse you. There's other people in the community that have endorsed you. Who are the people that have endorsed you that, and what does it mean to you that they've, you know, publicly are endorsing you?
Oh, I mean, the list is so long, I don't even know where to start. But the people that come to mind, for example, is Fred Miramontes. He was a very important person for me because he's well-respected. He's a man of integrity. To have his trust and have him wanting to work with me is a big thing. But I've also had other people, not just law enforcement. I've had people who are very strong in the community, like John Moreno, James Gonzalez, who's involved in autism support, mm-hmm. Victor Jaime, the past president of Imperial Valley College, and his friend Carlos Fletes, both of them endorse me. There's a lot of people, and I'm very grateful. And that to me just means a lot to me. It really does, because I think when people see the type, these people are not going to throw their name behind you, mm-hmm. if they don't trust you, because they're people whose reputation matters, their name matters. They're not going to put their names behind you if they do not trust you. Period. Mm-hmm. So that to me means a lot. It tells me I've done something right. It's important.
Yeah. Like I said, I saw that John Moreno was endorsing you, and yeah, he's a pillar of this community, Calexico. So you know, and I'm sure it does mean a lot. You know, him, and like you said, it's his. He's putting his name out there for you, and yeah, it means a lot.
Yeah. There's other people. I'm trying to think. Carla Sigmund, is one of them. Isabel Solis, they're both on the IVC board. Kiki Alvarado here in Calexico. Yeah, there's just so many people who have supported me. I just Nabil Newjum. He's a ex soccer coach, Central. You know, well respected. He's a karate coach too. Yeah, kind of legendary in the soccer. Really? He talks Central soccer. You know, he led those great Central soccer teams in the 80s. A lot of people.
And anything else that I didn't cover that you would like to talk about before we kind of conclude our conversation here today?
I want people to know that it's important that you do your research in this election and look what's out there. I mean, what I bring to the table is a wide perspective, experience, not just in my field as a criminal attorney, both as a former prosecutor and as a defense attorney, but also bring life experience as a father of two little girls, as a husband, as a son of two immigrants, you know, who worked hard. My parents were very humble. They had first grade education. My mom had a sixth grade education. You know, I just feel I can connect with a lot of people because we have very similar roots. Mm-hmm. You know, people here in the Imperial Valley are very humble. I want them to do their homework before they make their decisions. And they're going to see after doing their homework that I have the experience to do a good job here. I really feel that in my heart.
How do, you know, people want to, get to know you and people that still haven't made up their mind, how can they reach out to you to, you know, if they want to have a conversation, have a coffee, have a beer and have a talk with you, how can they reach you or how can they follow your campaign?
They can go to Facebook and George Marquez for District Attorney 2022. I'm also on Instagram. They can go to my webpage at George Marquez for District Attorney. They can call me on my cell phone and I'll give it out right here. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take calls and answer questions. It's 760-897-0488. Okay. 760-897-0488. Call me with any question. That's my personal cell phone number and I'll be happy to answer any questions that you have.
All right. Well, George, thank you for coming down again, coming down to the podcast and having a conversation. Thank you for coming back to, well, not back, but, you know, down here to Calexico Brewing. I want to wish you good luck on your campaign. And, like he said, if you want to reach him for, you know, have a conversation, get to know him, get to see if he's a candidate for you, you have all his information and he's gladly to talk to you.
Yeah, I want to thank you for the opportunity to be here and have a wonderful rest of your day.
All right.
Bye.
George, thank you.
Bye.